Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Oh, good morning. Sound check, one, two.
It works.
Turn me up in my headphones. What's going on, guys? Day of the week. Is it Wednesday?
Middle of the week.
Hump day? Patty and I were discussing this off the air. This is midweek, right? Like early week, it's Monday, Tuesday, and then late week is Thursday,
yeah.
Friday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When people are like, yeah, I'll get back to you early in the week. If we hit Wednesday,
yeah, if
I'm knocking on that door.
If I haven't heard anything by 11 o'clock on Wednesday,
Time to make a phone call.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to The Big Show in the morning. My name is Matt Rose. He's Patty Dumas. Alex Brody's in the other room. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning.
And we've put together a little bit of a program here for our listeners. Because, listen, it's not every day that a defenseman that you grew up watching and, you know, understanding his importance to the sport retires. It's definitely not every day that three of them kind of hang them up all at once. So we'll be diving into that as the day goes on. Eric Erlandson is going to join us just to talk a little bit of Lightning. It's not really related to any of the retirements or signings or anything that's happened recently, but we're kind of diving a little bit deeper into the hockey this week and figured we would check in with the Lightning. Another trip to the Stanley Cup final, but this time, no Stanley Cup parade. Still a short off season, but didn't get to do the parade. So we'll ask Eric how he's doing as we get set for
different off season for
training
them.
Camp. A very different off season. Once again, they had to say goodbye to a bunch of players, but they weren't celebrating Stanley Cup rings while doing it.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a little bit different. We'll talk to Eric in hour number two, midway through hour number two. Joe Haggerty from Boston Hockey Now is going to join us just after 8 o'clock as well. Hockey with Hags. Covered the Bruins for, I believe it's 22 years that he's been on that beat.
So he's seen a lot. He's seen all of Chara.
So he would have seen Chara for a couple of seasons as a Senator while he was on that beat.
An Islander.
Even. Wow.
OG Islander. I know he retired with the Islanders, but he was an Islander draft pick.
Well, he retired with the Bruins. He signed a one-year
contract. Well, yeah, signed one-year. Last time he played was with the Islanders.
But nevertheless.
Yeah.
Three guys all retiring at once.
What if they all got to, hey, guys, we're all going to announce our retirement on the same.
Yeah, I bet Subban and Chara are real buddies from those battles.
I guess Keith announced it kind of the day before on Spitting Chicklets. Podcast, but
it was a 24-hour.
It was 24 hours.
Yeah,
and then Chara and Subban back to back.
Yeah, really. It was literally we went one commercial break, and it was who was first? Z
Chara was first. Yeah,
and then we went another commercial break, and Subban hung him up.
I mean, PK's been traveling a lot this summer. He's been a vacation boy.
He's not going to be a vacation island boy. He's not going anywhere.
No.
You're going to see PK Subban.
ESPN used him last year. I'm sure they'll use him again this year. Yeah, he's got that voice. He's got that personality that he will be an analyst somewhere talking about this game for the next 20-odd years.
So yesterday, I put young Alex Brody to the test.
Yeah.
He said, hey, young buck. There's a bunch of players that you probably, as we get the old-timey music going here, you probably haven't heard of a lot of these players. Maybe go look at some of their highlights and stuff. So Brody did, and he's collected a whole bunch of stuff for us. So Brody, maybe throw in my Burley here, and we'll dive into a couple. Like, for instance, PK Subban analyzing himself on Sportsnet. Look forward to more of this.
Goes out here. Now look at this. He goes out here. You do that. And I'm telling you, back in the day when we had Semenko and these guys.
This is actually him doing his best Don Cherry impersonation while he analyzes himself.
These guys, they took care of that stuff. PK, he's a good player. I mean, he's no Bobby Orr. He's a good player. He's no good.
That PK, part.
He's a good player. I mean, he's no Bobby Orr.
You can tell he's watched a few broadcasts.
It's not Bobby Orr.
He's a pretty good player. It's not no Bobby Orr. Good Canadian boy. So I'm excited to see PK, whatever comes next for him, because he's kind of got one of those larger-than-life personalities, right?
100%. And it's something that, you know, among a lot of NHLers, you know, it's a league that's kind of sometimes low on personality a little bit.
Yeah.
And then with PK Subban, he was a guy that, you know, always had a smile on his face every time he got onto the ice. He was an entertaining player to watch. I know the career didn't obviously pan out the way he wanted to at the end there. Yeah, and for sure. I mean, he won the Norris in the lockout shortened year. I don't want to diminish anything PK did. I mean, he's a gold medal winner for Canada at Sochi, and he won a two-time World Junior medals as well. As those 08 and 09 teams were absolutely magical. I mean, we got Tavares and Eberle on those teams as well. I mean, those teams were legendary for Canada, and PK was arguably probably one of the best defensemen on those teams as well. So,
sure.
It's great careers for all three of them. Keith Yandle, obviously, the 989 straight games. I mean, Phil's doing it right now.
Enjoy that record while you have it.
But yeah, so Phil's,
unless something happens to Phil, who actually was looking kind of svelte when I saw a picture of him doing the golf tournament for Vegas. But
this game wears on you so much, and especially playing a defenseman, defensive position, you know, blocking shots, getting into corners, playing that many games. It's amazing how they were able to do it and just play through the pain all these times.
Keith Yandle had a season where he played in 84 games.
Ah, it was the year he got traded, probably.
Yeah, he got traded from Arizona to New York. Yeah, so going through the Ironman streak, he ended up playing two more games than everybody else in the league.
They
that
used
year.
To play 84 regularly for a couple of years. So.
And then they were like, we'll just take two games off. It's too much.
Too much.
Whoa, it's too much. Whoa, just joking. So this is kind of wild. I threw the question to you, kind of a offhand comment before we started the show. But when it's all said and done, is Keith Yandle's Iron Man streak, like, how is it? I find it hard to say, but is it more impressive than PK Subban's NHL career? Because between them, you have zero cups. There is the one Norris for PK Subban. And like you mentioned, it was in a shortened season. He did have a couple of runner-ups as well. He was a good point producer, but he didn't hit 1,000 games. Yandle did. He was also a good point producer. He played 989 games consecutively. And granted, this last season in Philadelphia, he was not a good player, but he did it. You know, you look in the record book, his name's there. They don't show, you know, what his plus minus was the entire season. Minus 47, by the way. But 989 games. So the answer is no. PK Subban does have a Norris. It wasn't a shortened year, but he does have a Norris. I don't think that there's that much disparity between the NHL careers of Keith Yandle and PK Subban.
No, I mean, I think Keith Yandle, obviously, he's got more points than PK, just the longevity at that position. For the position, I would say, yeah, Keith Yandle probably had the better NHL career. But, you know, PK Subban, he was one of those guys that maybe transcended the NHL. You know, guys outside of the NHL knew who he was. Oh, I know who PK is. He's on ESPN. He's doing stuff in the States. He was dating Lindsey Vonn. You know, people knew who PK Subban was. So I get like maybe on the star scale. No, Keith Yandle probably was never a star, but PK Subban was probably for a couple 3 years. Thought, hey, this guy might be a top five defenseman in the league.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he won the King Clancy in his final season for just like, it's everything. It's like basically general philanthropic work. It is combating racism. It was helping out with people who were, you know, kind of down bad after COVID. It's going back to the massive donations he's made to the Children's Hospital in Montreal. It's a little bit of everything involved with that.
And I think like, we know what PK Subban is. Like, I remember like the goal celebrations in the playoffs, and then how many times did he see Keith Yandle in the playoffs? He had the long run with Phoenix back when they went to the conference final.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he had the Rangers go to the conference final as well.
Let's see here. He's only played seven of his 16 years. He's gone to the playoffs.
Yeah, and he had
three in Phoenix, two with the Rangers, and two with the Panthers.
So the 2012 year in Phoenix would have been his most impressive long run with them, and then he went to the conference final with the Rangers.
14-15 yeah. Conference final with the Rangers, 11 points in 19 games that year. The prior season that you just mentioned, he did play in the 16 games, Mike Smith being the kind of big backbone that helped him get to the conference
final. Darryl beat him, though.
sure. 9 points in 16 games, that postseason run for Keith Yandle. So that is certainly a lot less. 36 points in 58 playoff games for Keith Yandle.
Yeah, 62 playoff points for P.K. Subban.
Yeah, like I said, it's P.K.
Went
Subban.
Went to a cup final.
But, like, when it's all said and done, I think it's a little bit more surprising that the gap is, you know, maybe what it is.
Yeah.
Looking back. So we talked about PK, probably going to end up, you know, fingers crossed, Sportsnet analyst, but you never know. Yandle? Spitting chiclets? Is that where we're going to see him?
Hey.
That's where he announced his retirement.
Yeah, I mean, if he's in with
good
the Ryan
buddies
Whitney
with those boys.
And Biz and all them, and he's a Boston guy, so you know all those Barstool guys hanging around there. So
that's kind of their hub.
I could give Keith Yandle a podcast or put him on Spitting Chicklets or I don't know Keith Yandle's personality. I've never seen him. So
I feel like he's one of those guys that a lot of the players really love to be around, but I don't know how he is in interviews. That's a very fair point. And then there's Zdeno Chara.
One of the best.
What comes next for the big man? Whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Family time.
Yeah. Like,
I wonder if he stays away from the game.
Could totally for a bit. I think this could be a guy.
He talked about, you know, family time being one of the main reasons. He's got three kids that he wants to spend some time with right now.
What, like, NHL.com is a good article up written by Eric Russo about the character that Chara brought to Boston and how in 2006 that was a game changer for them.
Mm-hmm.
From 2006 on, the Bruins have been there. Before that, you know, they had the cup final like 91 with the Oilers, but then it was over 50 years, I believe, between cups.
They were a bad team, man. Like when we were growing up, the Bruins were not good.
I mean,
they had some good years, but they weren't anything close to the juggernaut that we've known for the past decade or two.
Because it was after Chara, it was Bergeron, it was Marchand. It was these guys, it was Tuukka Rask, it was Phil Kessel, it was all these guys that came in after Chara that started building that Bruin culture up to what it is today. And now you're kind of seeing that, like, the Bruins are kind of at that crossroads right now where, you know, we don't know what this team is.
I say they weren't bad when we were growing up. They missed the playoffs 4 of 7 seasons from the 99-2000 year to 06-07, and apart from that, it's basically been... Oh, if we miss the playoffs, we're back the next year. We might not win a round, but we'll be back in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a team that for a long time is
a team that maybe probably should have had more than one cup.
Oozed excellence. Well, yeah, and you look at it, they win the Stanley Cup final against the Vancouver Canucks. They get back to it 2 seasons later.
Lockout year.
Lose to Chicago.
In a dramatic game 6. That thing was going to 7.
In an amazing series. And then the series against the Blues, where Chara's playing with his jaw stapled to his face.
Mm-hmm.
Because he took that puck in the giblets, and they basically had to wire him shut and were feeding him through an IV. And they went to 7 games against the Blues, and they end up losing that one as well. And even after that, I think we were like, well, probably got to blow it up. Chara, Zia, Bergeron.
No, DeBrusque wants out.
Career. Now, granted, that was after the 2018-2019 season. And then things got kind of weird. There was like a pandemic and stuff like that. Things got a little wacky. Krejci left. Now they're back.
The players didn't like Bruce Cassidy. We know that.
That's a really generous way of saying they didn't like him. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really didn't like that guy.
They were not fans. No.
And I think Jim Montgomery now is going to help that club out so much. But it's just like, read that article if you can. It's on NHL.com. It's just the character that Char brought And just changing it in Boston, making them one of the most consistent franchises we've seen over the last decade and a half.
And it's the same thing. Like, the guy was healthy scratched in New York a little bit this year. But I think with all three of these guys, to a certain extent, you're saying you kind of got to go out on your own terms.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't neck injuries. It wasn't concussions. It wasn't a bum knee. You know, I'm sure these guys are all dealing with their fair share.
Oh, hell yeah.
Injuries over the course of the career, Char especially. The guy's 45 and he's 6'9".
Yeah, but, like there's like a tallest player ever to play in the league, 6'9". First player born in an Eastern Bloc country to captain a team to a cup.
What else you got? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hardest shot ever at the skills comp, 108.8 in 2012.
Goodness. Can you imagine?
Five-time winner of the hardest shot comp.
That checks out. Honestly, feels a little shy.
Yeah, most Game 7 appearances in NHL history.
Just straight
playoff.
Up. Yep. Really?
Oldest defenseman in NHL history to score a game-winning goal in the Stanley Cup playoffs. 42 years, 30 days.
This is a long list of accolades.
Oldest defenseman in NHL history to score a goal in the Stanley Cup finals. 42 and 83 days.
Okay. That might be the same goal.
Score a goal in the finals and then the game-winning goal in the playoffs.
Okay, yeah.
And then the most games ever played by a defenseman in NHL history.
So that one, that's
going to
be
a probably
tough
not going
one
down. It's one thing, like, be 45 and playing like a forward position where you're not, you know, you can play the wing, you don't have to be the very physical guy.
Yeah.
But you're playing defense, you have to be that type of guy.
Especially Z. Like,
being how tall as he is and how good of a skater he was. I believe his dad was a Greco-Roman wrestler in the Olympics as well.
Sure.
76 in Montreal. Look it up.
Oh, I will. 1,680 games. Just trying to look up active NHL defenseman games played to see who would happen to be closest. Would that be what, like a Ryan Suter? Yeah, Suter would be closest, and he's literally 400 games back.
Not catching.
1,280.
Well, would that contract let him? No, I guess he doesn't have a new contract.
Like, where is there a youngish player that might be able to challenge here? Victor Hedman, 898.
I could see that.
And he was born in 1990. He could play for a while.
What's he average a year? Like 80 games a year?
I would assume he's pretty close. He plays a lot. He plays like 75.
Yeah, he's never been
missed. The problem is these three playoff runs, you wonder. But him, John Carlson, and Alex Pietrangelo, all born in 1990. And are all right around 880, 900 games played. So you still got 700. You've got to play 8 more seasons.
Yeah.
At least, basically healthy, as Hedman, Carlson, or Pietrangelo sit, and maybe you'll get to Chara. If you play 8 healthy seasons. Ugh. And those guys are already 32.
Yeah, that's.
I don't know if it's going to be beat. Eric Carlson's there, 1990, 838. He's not going to play that much longer.
When you just think of Chara in his predominant, like his, like, let's take away the last two seasons, even though he played a full season with the Capitals and almost a full season with the Islanders this year. The least games he's played in a regular season was, I believe, 63 in a predominant year. When
he played
wasn't.
55 last season with the Capitals.
Yeah, that was a lockout year. I'm saying in a full year where he's an established NHLer, the least games he played was 63.
Yeah, it's a lot of wear and tear.
Yeah.
Plays a lot, and especially because, like, for so many years...
A guy that played in the playoffs almost every year.
Well, and as much as he was the guy that would beat everybody up, like, there's a certain little bit of... If you're one of the big power wingers and Char's going back to get a puck, like, if you can kind of... put a good knock against the Giant, that'll get the whole team going.
Mm.
I remember doing that in minor hockey. We were getting our doors blown off by Bicycle once. And I was like, the one thing I'm going to try and do is get the big guy. And I did.
Good.
It was after the whistle. It was an illegal play. I felt really bad.
Maybe not good.
We got blown out 12-1. It was one of the redeeming qualities of the game. But, you know, the guy took a beating back there. Because there inherently, there's a little bit of a... little bit of a target on the back. Now, granted, you don't want to go too hard because then you gotta, he'll turn around and punch you right in the mush. But nevertheless, 45 years old, 187 days. Zdeno Chara hangs it up. Great to see. Awesome.
Also member of the Kentucky Thoroughblades for 48 games in the 97-98. Also was a Prince
the
George
what?
Cougar. The Kentucky Thoroughblades.
Oh.
They were the Islanders AHL team at the time.
Nice. Okay, here we go. A few texts coming in before we hit the break. The morning report. What does Gio go in the Hall of Fame? He won the Norris. What? Does Gio go in the Hall of Fame? He won the Norris. I think not. I don't think Gio's going to the Hall of Fame. Unless he wins the Stanley Cup with the Maple Leafs, then maybe. How long for Z to get into the Hall of Fame? I don't know. How long?
Was
first ballot?
5 years?
Something like that? I think so.
Hell yeah, he's first ballot.
Yans is hilarious. Super dry sense of humor with great one-liners. Okay. Puts Biz in his place all of the time, too, which is one of the things I do love about Whitney. Wasn't John Scott taller? Also competed in an All-Star game? I don't think John Scott was taller. I think he was like 6'7". And Cale Makar in like 20 years might be able to break it. We have a couple of texts about...
Scott's 6'8", 6'8", 260. So he's an inch shorter than Zdeno Chara.
How many games has Noah Hanifin played? Someone's texting in. Wonder if he might be able to do it. Now, granted, Hanifin's 25. He's played 517 games. If he keeps up his clip, which granted, he usually plays 79 to 82 games a season. He could do it. Maybe.
That's playing... So how many
That'd
games
be, he basically has to play a healthy season every year for...
Next 50.
He'd have to get 1,100 games.
Yeah, so...
Not 11,000, 1,100.
Yeah, so that's probably around 13, 14
seasons.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
You'd
have
well,
to play
you know
he's 38.
Thing, you know, you always start being like, well, guys are playing longer than they used to.
Yeah,
like,
but the NHL's also getting younger because players are entering the league.
It's also getting
than
less physical, so the guys aren't getting, their bodies
That's
aren't getting.
Point.
So I don't know. It's sports science
and
whatnot.
I could see Cale doing it eventually.
Yeah.
Maybe Noah Hanifin. I just don't know if he'll be in the league for up until he's 40. And then another person comes in and asks if Miro Heiskanen will get close. I could see Miro getting there as well. He's young enough.
Yeah.
We'll take a break around the corner. The morning report. We will dive a little bit into that. Flames doing their fitness testing today. Training camp officially opens tomorrow.
Ho, 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 ho.
We made it. We made it, folks.
We did.
Rejoice. So we'll get into all of that. A Jays game.
That thing was long.
It was long. Gosh, it was long.
Are we talking about offense and baseball? That was a little bit too much offense.
I didn't like that game.
Every time, like, Jays had a nice lead. Stripper got nailed in
stripper?
His... Stripper? Got stripper. Chicken strip got nailed.
Strips?
Strips got nailed
I
in
like
his...
Strips more.
Strips got nailed in his last inning there. And but then, you know, the Jays... Every time the Phillies did something, the Jays would tack on more offense. So... But hopefully, you know, they do that. Every time the bats heat up, they go cool for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hopefully we get some, you know, at least 5 runs and get the win today. Get the sweep over the Phils. Move on to Tampa.
Listen, we're going to break the game down in a moment and look ahead. Plus a little look at the wild card races, some hockey stuff. Oh, and the Stampeders have a player suspended. We'll dive into all of that next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Hey, do you know when we are going to talk about the Coyotes?
Right now?
In the morning report, brought to you by Motorworks, exceeding all expectations, BMW repairs and service in a state-of-the-art facility where they'll meet and beat all competitors' quotes on 51st Ave and 3rd Street Southeast.
Marty Rose.
Matt Rose. Matt Rose. Let's dive in. Well, I'd like to begin with the Calgary Flames. They go through their physical testing later on a Wednesday before main camp officially opens Thursday, ahead of their first preseason game Sunday, split squad against the Canucks. The team does have 3 players in on PTOs. They got some younger players who are maybe pushing against odds to make the team. Assistant General Manager of the Flames and the General Manager of the Calgary Wranglers, Brad Pascal, joined Pat Steinberg on Flames Talk Wednesday, and he talked just about that, this being a springboard for a strong season.
We obviously want and demand to have a competitive team, and it starts with the start of camp, and that's, you know, that's the atmosphere and the culture that we have built and continue to develop in. So we're excited about that. And I think bringing in some PTOs, I think that creates even more competition and pushes guys. And I think that's a good thing. And secondly is organizational depth. I mean, it's inevitable. You're gonna have times where guys are moving up and down, and for various reasons. And that's really important for a winning franchise.
Apart from that, just waiting on Adam Rzeczka to sign, one of the few remaining unsigned RFAs across the league. But we'll have more on that in just a moment. Yesterday, it was Nathan MacKinnon extension day.
The Mac Attack is back!
The Avalanche forward, fresh off his first Stanley Cup win, gets an 8-year deal, becoming the highest paid player in the NHL. The AAV coming in at $12.6 million. Total money, $100.8 million. He's set to play this season at 6.3. We had Connor McGahee on, who you just heard in the clip there. We asked him if MacKinnon should be the highest paid player in the league before the signing was announced, like literally about an hour before it was announced. And one of Connor's main points was that MacKinnon has done something that 97 has not.
Does that mean that you deserve, with not outrageous numbers, but you should have won a Hart Trophy a couple seasons ago? I mean, you're one of the faces of the NHL Mount Rushmore now. And I think that because of the way that you play, how you play, the way that you contribute, and now what you've done to win, that should earn you, even if it's by a nickel, to be the highest paid player in the National Hockey League.
Slightly more than a nickel, but MacKinnon does have a ring. McDavid does not. And MacKinnon becomes the highest paid player in the NHL by $100,000.
Yeah, and that's deserved, I think, for sure. He's the year he had last year and winning a Stanley Cup, taking the next step forward. That sets the bar. Who's next?
Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you'd think Austin Matthews. He'd be the $13 million, one to break it.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
In Arizona.
Man, I love college. Hey!
The Coyotes have signed RFA forward Barrett Hayton. 22-year-old Barrett Hayton, fifth overall pick from 2018, 2 years, $1.775 million per season, 3.55 total. Last year, 24 points in 60 games with the Coyotes, also had a brief stint in the AHL. That leaves seven remaining RFAs. Mentioned Rzeczka.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Rasmus Sandin in Toronto, Ryan McLeod in Edmonton, Alex Formanton in Ottawa, Jason Robertson in Dallas, and Nick Hague with the Vegas Golden Knights. Oh, and Parker Weatherspoon with the Islanders.
I think we know what Robertson, we're waiting on Robertson. Dallas just doesn't have the cap space. Rasmus Sandin in Toronto, that's an interesting contract.
Especially because apparently Liljegren's going to be hurt.
Yeah.
He got hurt recently. He's going to miss some time.
Like, they need him, I would figure. Or, like, you try to move him here? I don't know. But, like, word out of Toronto is they want Rasmus Sandin. They're just waiting on it.
Because they got what? Riley? Hall? Brody?
Yeah. Gio?
Muzzin? And then Sandin or Liljegren?
Yeah.
That's a pretty good core.
Yeah.
Started coming down the show yesterday. 36-year-old Keith Yandle retiring late on Monday, early Tuesday after 16 pro seasons, 989 consecutive games played from March 2009 to March 2022, 619 points over 1,109 NHL games while playing with the Coyotes, Rangers, Panthers, and then Flyers. And then after that, it was Zdeno Chara retiring, the NHL's all-time leader in games played by a defenseman and the tallest man to ever play at 6'9". Signed a one-year contract to retire as a member of the Bruins.
Three kids at home and being involved and not to miss, their birthdays, their special occasions, and I knew that was the right decision, and I'm completely happy with it. I have no regrets. I would not change a thing. We are in a business where everything is judged by winning, but I had my shares of, the highs and the lows, and that's okay.
The big man retires for the team that he played 1,023 of his 1,680 games for, 14 of his 24-year career spent in Boston, a cup final, three finals appearances, won the Norris in 08, 09, and was a three-time finalist. And finally, PK Subban also deciding that'll be it at the age of 33. A 13-year career for PK, 834 games with Montreal, Nashville, and New Jersey. A two-time World Junior Gold Medalist, an Olympic Gold Medalist, 467 points. Also had a Norris and was a finalist two other times. Three very, very strong careers.
Oh, yeah. And I just going back to Chara, I look back at that 06-07 Ottawa Senator team that made the Stanley Cup Final. It was the first year without Zdeno Chara as well.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if Chara sticks it around in Ottawa with that group. I don't, again, I can't go back into their cap situation, what it was in July of 2006 and what the contracts were, but just Chara with Heatley, with Alfredson, with Spezza, Redden was on that team. Man, if Chara just stuck around, maybe it's different for their Ottawa Senators in the summer or spring of 07.
We shall find out. We'll shift over to the Diamond. I'm sure we're going to get some more NHL news coming sooner rather than later, but for now, it's October. It's baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Blue Jays were facing the Phillies last night, cracking open a fresh two-game set on the road. Just 15 games left going into this one. Ross Stripling on the mound. Bob Ross painting for the Jays. Finger painting? Painting with clay, maybe? Phillies sending veteran righty Kyle Gibson to the mound. Alejandro Kirk back in the lineup. Love the locomotive. Batting fourth. Both these teams in a pretty tight wild card race in their respective leagues as well. Vladdy got on base after second baseman Bryson Stotts absolutely skied a throw to first in the first inning. Throw was already late, but he ripped it right into the right dugout and smoked the first baseman camera operator. Did you see this?
I did not, but I heard about it.
Poor Art got him right on the bean.
Oh,
I felt
man.
So bad. The guy was busted wide open.
Oy.
My girlfriend was absolutely appalled for this poor man. He actually had to go to the hospital.
Oh, yeah. Poor boy.
Poor guy. But you know what he didn't do? Didn't cry.
There's no crying in baseball.
Even when you're not even playing the sport.
No, sir. Kirk would take a walk, and then, Matt Chapman coming to the dish. What's up, Chappie?
1-0. Hit high and deep. Up the left field line. Schwarber gets to the wall, and it is gone. A three-run home run for Matt Chapman. His third home run in four games. And the Blue Jays go long and strike in the first.
Oh, that's a great start. 3-0 lead for the Jays. Quick three outs for Ross Stripling. Turn the ball back over to the Jays. They would proceed to add one run in each of the second and third innings as well, taking a 6-0 lead and bringing out some boo birds from the Philly faithful. Well, I don't blame them, though. You go from watching Jalen Hurts running around throwing up dubs to this. The Jays would try to add a run for the fourth consecutive inning, but the Phillies would turn a nice double play with Kirk at bat to end the streak. The Phillies would take some momentum from that. Couple of knocks put runners on the corners for the left-handed batter, Bryson Stotts.
Runner from first is going. Ground ball in the middle of the diamond. Diving stop by Bichette. Pops up. Low throw to first on a bounce. Not in time. A run comes in. Phillies will score their first.
And I hated that because, honestly, I still wasn't happy with Stotts after he beaned Art the camera guy back in the first. That guy's a jerk.
Screw you, Bryson Stotts.
Bryson Stotts. Beat it. Shutout bid is over. Jays would get another run knocked in by Danny Jansen. Third hit of the night. He was
when you need Jano to come through, he usually does. And it happens in these games where they score more than 15 runs.
His third hit of the night made it 7-1, but the Phillies would try to chip away on the first pitch of the fifth inning.
Brandon Marsh, the Phillies just let us know a little bit ago that he left because of left knee discomfort.
Ooh,
and Guthrie smokes one out to deep left field. That ball's gone.
It's gone.
Well, that ball's gone.
Out to deep left field. That ball's gone.
That ball's gone.
Got out of here.
First career home run for Dalton Guthrie, who would replace Marsh in the outfield. Outfield had bonked himself off the wall, hurt his knee. Then an infield hit took a weird bounce past Bo. Teoscar Hernandez couldn't make a diving grab, so a couple runners on for first baseman Reese Hoskins. With no runners on and Stripling right around 60 pitches, this was trouble time.
Now the 1-2. Corked up the line and left. That's a base hit all the way into the corner. Pearling's around third. He's going to score. Schwarber gets a stop sign at third. He moves corner to corner on an RBI double for Hoskins. 1-2. Harper rolls it through the right side. That's a base hit. And to score is Schwarber. Behind him, Hoskins, who gets a late stop sign at third base because there's nobody out.
All of a sudden, this fun and cheery blowout is a little bit of pucker time. That'd be it for Ross Stripling. He leaves with the score 7-4 and runners on the corners with no outs. Zach Pop in to minimize the damage, but not a great start, honestly.
Have a 2-1 pitch. Line drive into right field, a base hit. Another run for Philadelphia. Hoskins hits the plate on a base hit from Real Muto. His third hit tonight. It's an RBI single.
Can't blow this, you guys.
You can almost feel the panic in Ben's voice. He's like, this is good.
I've already been here for 3 hours.
Yeah. So that would bring the go-ahead run to the plate. Then how about this little play to end the inning after Pop got the first out via a pop out? Sorry.
1-1. Stott swings and he loops it into center field. That'll carry to Springer. Catch is made. Harper drifted away from second. The throw by Springer to second. In time! A massive double play turned by the Blue Jays.
There you go.
Would you say...
That ball's gone.
That guy's gone.
There you go.
That's a nice double play. That's a bad base running by Bryce Harper also. But the Phillies would add a few runs.
Had too much fun at the Eagles game.
Yeah, good for him. Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. A lot of people did. Cut the lead to 7-5. Ross Stripling's line, not great. 4 innings, 5 earned runs on 9 hits, no walks, and 3 strikeouts. The Phillies made a change as well. Gibson leaves the contest after 5 innings, 12 hits against, 7 earned runs with a walk, and 3 strikeouts. Just awful pitching lines.
What's the score right now?
The score right now would be 10-5. After Toronto added another run in the 6th and 2 more in the 7th to escape the trouble near the end of Stripling's night. But they would look for more in the 8th. The bases loaded.
Hernandez swings and he loops one into right field. That's down for a base hit. Bo comes in to score. RBI single for Hernandez. First pitch. That's a liner into left field. Down for a base hit for Raimel Tapia. Kirk comes in to score. Chapman's heading towards the plate. Sliding into third without a play is Hernandez. Tapia stands at second. He delivers a 2-run double. Ground ball in the middle of the diamond. Ranging to his right, a backhand by Segura. Picks it up, throws to first. In time, that'll retire Kevin Biggio. He'll play another run for the Blue Jays with an RBI ground out. It's 14-5, Toronto.
So, you got a 9-run lead. You only need 6 outs. The Phillies have been a mess all night. But you know who else has been a bit of a mess this year? Julian Merriweather.
Bases loaded around Merriweather. Pitch to Guthrie. That's very high. Ball 4. A bases loaded walk. 1-2. Ground ball up the middle. Backhanded by Biggio. Shovels it over to Bichette to get an out at second base. And the only out the Blue Jays can turn with that dribbler up the hill. 1-2. Hit high and deep. Out to right field. You can forget that one. That's off the second deck. A 3-run no-doubter from the bat of Kyle Schwarber. His 38th of the season. That ball's gone.
Credit the Phils fans for just
sticking around,
and they were booing the Jays fans every time the Jays fans started to get Go Jays Goes going. The Phillies fans just boo, typical Philly.
Go Bears!
Go Bears!
Don't respect me. Chaos was everywhere in this game. All I wanted was to turn this damn game off, but Julian Merriweather said, not so fast. Jays needed another burst to get this thing put away for good.
1-1. Hit high and deep. Out to right field. Guthrie gets to the wall. Jackie Bradley Jr. sends it out of here. Man, oh man, is this a night for the Blue Jays to ever fly high.
I'm pretty sure every position player except for Whit Merrifield played. They had like 12 extra base hits. They were like 12 for 25 with runners in scoring position.
Yeah,
like,
that's good.
It was very good, but the numbers were just, you shouldn't be doing this in the major leagues.
Game should have been over after Stripling got through it. If he just got out of that inning, if the Phillies didn't chase Stripling.
The only thing this game was missing was a Yusei Kikuchi appearance. That made it 18-10 for the Jays. They brought in a position player to pitch after that, they being the Phillies, Garrett Stubbs. And this actually was my favorite part of the game.
The overlay. Rob Freeman, the pitching.
I know.
Oh, my God. The
overlay. Stubbs comes in. He's a position player. I don't even know what position he plays. But he had the Ephus pitch going. He was throwing like 37, 38, 36. These just looping.
39, 37, 36 were all his Ephus pitches.
Yeah. And Danny Jansen. I love it because it reminds me of slow pitch. You got Danny Jansen swinging at pitches up by his eyes. Like, what are we doing here? Eventually, I think it was a 1-2 count. And then Stubbs just pulls out an 84-mile-an-hour fastball.
Swinging strike.
It just gets Danny.
It had 24 inches of break and velocity. I got the real stats on this.
It was so good.
The Ephus pitch span. Oh, my God. It's like a 169-inch drop on the Ephus pitch that...
I retweeted it at Matt Rose YYC. It was my favorite part of the game. And Danny's laughing, and Stubbs has like the biggest smile you've ever seen on his face. That's some fun stuff,
that's
man.
Baseball, I love that.
Throwing those EFAS pitches and being like, "Oh, I got a little something, something in here in my toolbox." Got him. But the Jays would win 18-11. The final score. Phelps closed it out. 4:45 first pitches. The Jays try for the season sweep. Game two of this two-game mini set. Kevin Gausman and Zach Wheeler in the pitching matchup. You can listen to this one on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Elsewhere in the AL wildcard race, the Rays hosted the Astros. Shane McClanahan started the game, but left during it with what looked to be shoulder discomfort after four innings. That's a problem for the Rays, as he's one of their top pitchers, if not the top pitcher. Astros had already beat him up a bit before he left. Five runs allowed as the Rays fall 5-0 to Houston. The Mariners were visiting the A's. We talked about Seattle's easy schedule on Tuesday's program. Easy, but you still have to beat the teams that are on the schedule, like the A's.
Right field, toward the corner, Haniger's back, and that baby is gone!
Seventh home run of the season for Tony Kemp as the A's beat the Mariners 4-1.
In front of like 4,000 people, I think.
Yeah, rowdy. The AL wildcard looks like this. The Jays are on top, 2 games up on the Rays, 2.5 games up on the Mariners. They are sitting pretty right now. Granted, still 14 games. Things can change. They got to play the Rays in one more series, but you got to like where you're at right now. AL Central division deciding series with the Guardians in Chicago to face the White Sox. Really, Chicago needed to sweep the series to give themselves a decent chance as the season winds down. This one needed 11 innings of ball. The Guardians plated 5, while the Sox only crossed 2 on an A.J. Pollock home run. The Guardians take a 10-7 victory and increase their division lead to 5 games. That might be it for the White Sox.
Yeah, good night, Chicago. I mean, it was a too talented team. They're going to reevaluate it, obviously. They got to make the manager change. They got better once Tony La Russa left the club.
Mm-hmm.
So,
elsewhere, not necessarily related to the playoff race, really. Yankees are most likely going to be winning the division and getting a bye in the first round. But a big one for Aaron Judge yesterday.
Drove deep to left field. There it goes. Number 60. Aaron James Judge has tied George Herman Babe Ruth with 60 home runs.
Pirates almost won that game.
Almost.
Almost.
60 home. Yeah, what was it?
They blew the lead.
Walk-off grand slam, yeah. Stanton, something like that.
Yeah.
60 home runs, just one back of the American League record of 61 with plenty of action left to go. Triple crown winner?
Possibly you.
Possibly you. Aaron
that might
Judge,
be the decider for
listening.
MVP.
Yeah, maybe. In the National League, the Mets starting a 3-game set with the Brewers. They race the Braves for top spot in the NL East, who are continuing a 3-game set with the Nats. Mets with a 1-game lead going into Tuesday's games. They would beat the Brewers 7-5, while the Braves also notched a win 3-2 over the Nationals. That keeps 1 game between the division-leading Mets and the trailing Braves. And we've already talked about the Phillies. They lose to the Jays. We just mentioned the Brewers. They lose to the Mets. Both those teams are fighting with the Padres for the final 2 wild card spots. Padres were starting a 3-game set at home to the Cardinals, and Mike Clevinger went 5 2/3 innings of shutout ball, allowed 3 hits and 2 walks with 3 strikeouts, and his bullpen backed him up as the Padres won 5-0. So here is the wild card story in the National League. San Diego is in the second wild card spot. The first is held by the Braves. Yep. They've clinched a spot. San Diego, they're a game and a half up on Philadelphia, who sit in the third wild card, and then with that loss, Milwaukee, now 2.5 games back of Philadelphia and a wild card berth. Finally, at Stamps practice yesterday, first practice of the week, they're getting set for a weekend matchup in BC against the Lions. We found out the Stampeders are going to be without linebacker Cam Judge, suspended 1 game for punching Lucky Whitehead after the game Saturday at McMahon Stadium, an overtime loss for Calgary. We did have a chance to speak to Judge after practice, where he told us he would not be appealing his suspension. He also would not give details about what was said, but acknowledge that the fact that, you know, he's letting his team down, and that's the part that hurts him the most.
It's very disappointing. You know, I feel like I let my team down, and that's usually not something that I do, but that's what happened, and I feel bad about it, and hoping the guys, you know, get my back out there and get the win.
And Judge, having a monster season, had a great game against the Lions, too. We'll see if Frazier Sopic can return from his hand injury to help fill that void at linebacker on Saturday. Closed practice. Later here on Wednesday, then they will practice again Thursday, then they will travel Friday. That's when we'll get the depth charts and see what changes the team does have to make.
How big of an impact is Cam Judge with him not being in that lineup on Friday?
Well, he's top 10 in tackles, top 10 in defensive plays, leads the league in forced fumbles. He's basically their one guy who spies the quarterback, which is important against a guy like Vernon who can move. Yeah, I'd say it's important.
Okay.
We'll see if Frazier Sopan can come back. Mm-hmm. If he can't, then you've got some questions. And they also got some receivers banged up. Malik Henry didn't practice due to illness yesterday. We might see a bit of a ratio change.
Okay.
They might need to do it for this game. Mm-hmm. We'll see. But that's it. That's the...
And good night and good luck to you, sir.
That's the morning report. And it's brought to you by Motorworks. Exceeding all expectations, BMW repairs and service in a state-of-the-art facility where they'll meet and beat all competitors' quotes on 51st Ave and 3rd Street, Southeast. The Stampeders also hired a new VP of Business Operations.
Yes.
We'll touch on that with Dave Dickinson next because the man they hired used to block for Dave.
Oh, yeah.
When he was a member of the Stamps.
People know this guy.
That all coming up. Dave Dickinson joins us next. Eric Erlandson also going to join us in hour number two. And Joe Haggerty going to be talking a little bit of Bruins to start number hour three shortly after 8 o'clock. So keep it locked. We also got Cavalry tickets to give away near the end of the show. We got a jam-packed program for you. Stick around. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.